World Sport from the BBC with Johnny Bryan. Coming up, Spanish football club Racing Santander refused to play their Copa del Rey tie with Real Sociedad over unpaid wages.
It's been 3 months without salary, and the worst is that the players don't know when they will receive this salary. So the situation is quite critical in Santander. The financial situation is quite important for these players, and they decided to force the situation.
We will have the latest ahead of football's transfer deadline day. And Michael Schumacher's doctors work to bring the Formula One champion out of his medically induced coma. But first, the Copa del Rey quarter-final second leg match between Real Sociedad and third-tier Racing Santander was abandoned when the Santander players carried out their threat to go on strike. They have not been paid since September and want the club's president, Ángel Lavín, and the board to resign. Sociedad were leading 3-1 from the first leg. Now, both sides took the field of play and kicked off as normal, but after Sociedad had kept possession for a brief spell without any challenge from the Racing players, the referee Gil Manzano called the game off when the Santander captain Mario Fernandez informed him his side would take no further part. The Sociedad players appeared to show solidarity with their opponents as they kicked the ball amongst themselves. And the Spanish football journalist Ernest Macia told the BBC that there is a lot of sympathy for the Santander players.
It was solidarity 100%. In fact, it's not only Real Sociedad that showed today the solidarity, the fans, and I would say the Spanish authorities, because Racing Santander players could be punished for this situation, for the fact that they decided to stop the match in the first minute of the game, but they will not. In fact, we've been informed that authorities have decided not to punish these players because they understand the situation. It's very critical in Santander. They were in first division 3 years ago, and now they are in third division. And it's not only the club, it's the players. They are human beings, and the situation for them is very critical.
Now, Friday is the final day for football clubs across Europe to strengthen their squads as it marks the end of the January football transfer window. With a preview of what we may expect to see on the last day and a roundup of all the transfers made on Thursday, here's the BBC's Ian Dennis.
Joseph Yobo, the former Everton defender, has joined Norwich City on loan from Fenerbahce. But as expected, another one that went through today was Ignacio Scocco, 2.5-year deal, Argentinian striker from Internacional to Sunderland. And Sunderland have loaned out their midfielder Ndiaye to Real Betis, and Diakite is likely to follow to Italy to join Fiorentina as well. They are hoping to bring in the Brighton midfielder Liam Bridcut, Gus Poyet linking up with him again. Adel Tarapt has joined AC Milan on loan from Queen's Park Rangers, and William Kvist, a midfielder, a Danish international, on loan from Stuttgart to Fulham with an option to buy. And it's what could still happen, I think, that it will excite and interest most football fans with just over 24 hours to go. And I'm expecting that Fulham will be really busy tomorrow, so much so that they've actually cancelled their scheduled media day tomorrow because of the busy nature of deadline day. And obviously Kostas Mitroglou, a Greek striker from Olympiakos, yet to be confirmed. Our understanding was having a medical today would be the most high profile of their transfer dealings. And of course the future of Tom Ince likely to be resolved tomorrow, in line to join Crystal Palace on loan, while Liverpool, I'm sure, will hope to conclude the deal of the Ukrainian midfielder Yevhen Konoplyanka from Dnipropetrovsk.
Doctors treating Michael Schumacher are reducing his sedation as they prepare to bring the 7-times former Formula One world champion out of a coma. That information has come from his manager. Schumacher suffered a severe head injury while skiing in the French Alps last month. More from BBC Sports News correspondent Richard Conway.
The statement says Michael's sedation is being reduced in order to allow the start of the waking up process, which may take a long time. Now, she goes on to say that for the protection of his family, it was originally agreed that they were only going to communicate this information once the process, as she puts it, was consolidated. And she says that no further updates will be given. But what this tallies with is reports yesterday in French media that this indeed was happening with Michael Schumacher, that his sedation was being lowered, that they were trying to bring him out of this coma, and we've had that confirmation being lowered, that they were trying to bring him out of this coma, and we've had that confirmation now from his manager that that is indeed the case.
In Formula One testing in Jerez, it's been a disappointing time for the world champions Red Bull and their drivers Sebastian Vettel and Daniel Ricciardo. The team has just managed just 13 laps in 3 days, and team principal Christian Horner and technical director Adrian Newey have returned to the team's base in Britain. Fastest on Thursday was the McLaren rookie Kevin Magnussen, and the Dane driver driving the car, on the day I was driving the car for the first time.
I don't think much surprised me. It surprised me that how much torque there is. It's a lot of torque, a lot of power. And it is different, you know, the sound's different, feels different, it's different, so it's positive. You know, I've been looking forward to this a lot, to get in the car, and you know, it feels, it's been a long winter, because I've been looking forward a lot, and we've worked hard, and I feel ready, and I think today was a positive day. I learned a lot, and I think we all learned a lot, so pretty happy.
The boss of Formula One, Bernie Eccleston, has written to all the teams suggesting double points should be on offer for the final three races of the coming season. The new format, which has been much criticised by fans, teams and drivers, has been introduced for the final Grand Prix of the season in Abu Dhabi. Now, Sunday's Super Bowl in New York will be played for the first time outside and in freezing temperatures. The BBC's Caroline Barker has gained exclusive access to the MetLife Stadium in New Jersey, where the match will be played, just days ahead of the big game, to find out how ground staff are coping with these unique circumstances.
Final preparations well underway at the stadium for the first cold weather Super Bowl held outdoors. And while fans contemplate taking sleeping bags, hot water bottles and each other for warmth, amongst all the weather, there's actually the small matter of a game that might break out. And for that, you need a pitch.
For the Super Bowl, this is the first in a cold weather climate with no roof, no anything to protect us from the weather. So it's going to be a little bit different. Ed Mangan, field director with the NFL, and this is my 25th, I believe.
Home of the New York Giants and New York Jets, the MetLife Stadium was built to handle any technology thrown at it. But it's also home to the first Super Bowl to be played outdoors on artificial turf. So what challenges for Ed?
We've removed this field 3-4 times now with snow. The first one we had almost 14 inches out here. So and of course every time we got a weather event coming in, we've got to cover it up and try to heat it and keep it as warm as we can. But you know, it is outdoors, so the temperature is, we can't do much about that. But we've had to deal with the snow, and that's kind of one of the things we've never had to deal with before.
Do the coaches come to you and say, you know, we'd like this done, that done? I mean, I guess with artificial turf, it's difficult to try and adjust it.
Stop it from raining, stop it from snowing, warm it up, yeah, all those things. But, you know, there's only so much we can do. We can't fight Mother Nature.
One positive, though, the weathermen say that it's supposed to get better for Sunday.
From what it's been, I mean, we're supposed to be maybe touching 40 or something. That might feel like a heat wave from what we've had.
Come game time Sunday, Ed's work will nearly be wrapped up. And for the pitch and those players on it, time to do their talking.
To golf, Rory McIlroy leads after the first round of the Dubai Desert Classic. McIlroy shot a 9-under par 63 to take his 2-stroke lead over Italy's Eduardo Molinari.
Played very well from tee to green, got the putter going as well. So all in all, it was a really good score. And I know that, you know, the scores are pretty low out there, so I'm going to need, you know, something similar the next few days to keep myself up there. You know, it's been a great off-season, great start to the season, and hopefully I can just keep it going.
The defending champion Stephen Gallagher was amongst five players to shoot a 66, whilst Tiger Woods is among a group of players 2 strokes further back. Finally, to cricket. Scotland have secured the final place in next year's World Cup in Australia and New Zealand with a 3-wicket win over Kenya in Christchurch. The United Arab Emirates secured the other place from the qualifying tournament in New Zealand with a 36-run win over Namibia. And to add to Kenya's disappointment, they've lost their one-day international status. They were awarded the one-day ranking in 1997 following their impressive World Cup debut the previous year. Stay with us, if you can, for further updates throughout the day. But for now, that is the latest world sport from the BBC.